Well, as I said earlier, this was going to be Rachel preaching today, and it's not going to be Rachel preaching today, but actually it's very much inspired by Rachel's preaching, because it just seemed that the thing that God was stirring in her for us at this time was something that was for us at this time. So rather than wait for the next time that she might preach it, I'm preaching it, which probably makes it in a slightly different style, but I hope very much brings what God is saying to us this morning. If you've been here over the last couple of weeks, we've been heading in a particular direction. Marion preached taking a passage about Moses, where Moses meets God in the burning bush, and as part of that conversation, God says, "What have you in your hand?" When he's saying, "What am I supposed to do? How can I lead these people? What have you in your hand?" And for Moses, it was his staff, and his staff ended up being used very much as part of what God was doing. In fact, it was called the staff of God after that. And last week, I was preaching on the feeding of the 5,000, where Jesus says, "How many loaves do you have?" And they go away and find all of five. But then Jesus manages to feed 5,000 people with them. The message being, in both those cases, what do we have as a church in our hand? What do we have as individuals in our hands that God is able to use in our own lives? And what have we as a church in our hands that God is able to use in the life and the time ahead in our church? Well, today we have a different reading from the Gospels. It's one that starts immediately. And when you read immediately, a bit of you might think, immediately after what? And the answer is, immediately after the feeding of the 5,000. So it's quite a suitable reading to have just now, as we were thinking about the feeding of the 5,000 last week. Immediately after the feeding of the 5,000, what's the situation then? What's going on? Well, before the feeding of the 5,000, we are told that they were really exhausted. They had hardly a time to rest and eat because people were coming and going. And Jesus said, "Come away to a quiet place and get some rest." And instead they ended up feeding 5,000 people. So they're still very tired. They still need some rest. They hadn't got the rest they had hoped for. What they had got is a lot of very amazed people. In John's Gospel's account of the feeding of the 5,000, people are saying, "This must be the promised prophet." People are beginning to realise that Jesus is something pretty special. Then Jesus sends them off in the boat. It's very clear about that. Get in the boat, off you go. And Jesus dismisses the crowd. And then he gets some time on his own in prayer, in solitude, long into the night, we discover. And how are the disciples doing? Well, they've got into this boat and they're going to the other side of the lake. But the wind is against them. They're being buffeted by the waves. In Mark's Gospel's account of this one, it talks about them straining at the oars. It's not an easy journey, and this is when they're already tired. They were already tired, and now they're having to do all this physical labour. And it's through the night, it's almost dawn by the time the action happens, the main action maybe. Jesus has sent them off. They're out on the water. It's quite a long way out on the water. This is an all-night row that we're thinking about with the wind against them. It's actually probably 8 miles across. The horizon is at 7 miles when you stand at the sea edge. So they wouldn't have been able to see the other side, even if it wasn't dark. But they knew where they were headed. They're going across. And it's a long bit of travelling. John's Gospel talks about them being a number of furlongs out or something, anywhere distance, which is about 3 miles out, right in the middle of the lake they are. And they're not sure when they're going to meet with Jesus again or how that's going to happen, because he sent them off and he stayed there. So there they are, and they must be thinking about all sorts of things. Part of them must be just thinking, "Wow, this is tiring." Part of them must be thinking, "Wow, that was amazing. We've just seen Jesus feed 5,000 people from our 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And so that would be good memories. Actually, just before the feeding of the 5,000, just before that hurly-burly of time where they said, "We need a break," part of the reason for that was the news had just come through that John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin, had been beheaded in prison. And so they must have been dealing with that as well. So joyfulness, grief, a whole mix of stuff, and tiredness. And Jesus isn't with them. And then suddenly Jesus is with them, or is he? They're looking and they see a figure who could be Jesus, but the figure is walking on the water. People don't walk on the water, so they think it must be a ghost. And they're terrified. And I would be pretty terrified if in the middle of the night, in whatever light you've got left, in the wind and the storm, suddenly there's somebody walking on the water. They're terrified. Hold that thought, hold that picture in your head. Just want to jump sideways here. We've just heard from Matthew's Gospel this story, but actually it's told in Matthew and Mark and in John, and with a slightly different emphasis in each one. I want to focus on part of the story from Mark's Gospel. I'm just going to read a few verses from the middle of the story. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." He was about to pass by them. That's the little phrase that I want to pick up that Mark says. He was about to pass by them. What does that mean? Does it mean he was about to go straight past? Is Mark just saying that he's going to ignore them? He's going on. Well, this is a big lake. It's quite difficult to get from one side to the other. If you're 3 miles out and it's stormy and you're a boat and you're somebody else who's walking, you're not going to pass each other like that unless there's a reason for it. So it does seem a bit ridiculous to think that Jesus was just going, "Oh, I seem to have bumped into the boat on my way past. I'll head on by." That can't be what's going on there. There must be more to it like that. We need to look at what passing by means in other parts of the Bible. If we do, it turns out that it has a very significant meaning in some other places. So we go to Exodus in the Old Testament, chapter 33. Moses is asking to see God's glory, daring to ask to see God's glory. And God says, "All right then, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you." And then he says, "When my glory passes by, you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." An amazing moment. Moses, who talked to God as a friend, amazing privilege he had, and he asked to see God's glory, and God talks about when my glory passes by. In 1 Kings chapter 19, God says to Elijah, a great prophet, but he's just thoroughly dismal at this time. He's just lost his confidence. He's running away. And God says to him, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." So in the Old Testament, on those occasions, God passing by means God making himself very present. It's not whizzing on past. It's about encountering God. And if we think that's what passing by is about, it gives a different meaning or more meaning to some of the passages in the New Testament. Starting with some different passages, at the beginning of John's Gospel, John the Baptist saw Jesus passing by and said, "Look, the Lamb of God." John had an encounter with God in that passing by, and he told his disciples about it. Two of them immediately went off to Jesus' side as well. I'm sure John didn't mind. But he had encountered God. And in Luke chapter 18, as Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. And when he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. And they told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." And he called out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Somehow, in the passing by of Jesus, the blind man recognized who Jesus was. The blind man recognized Son of David, the Messiah. What hope he had because of Jesus passing by. So in the Old Testament, God passing by is not about God being hidden, hiding himself from us, but God revealing himself to us and summoning faith from those people. summoning faith from Moses and Elijah. And in those two New Testament passages, Jesus passing by is not about him walking away. It's about him being revealed. And again, summoning faith from people, drawing out faith from people. So here on the lake, if Jesus is passing by, he's calling his disciples to see him for who he is and to be stirred up in their faith. It's not about them saying, oh, there goes Jesus. Oh, he's gone. It's about being stirred up in faith. Actually, first, they were terrified. And so he reassures them. It is I. I'm pretty sure he didn't say, it is I. He said, it's me. Well, he said something which would have engaged with them, even if it wasn't grammatically correct. And then Peter says this amazing thing, and mad thing. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. To which Jesus responds, come. And Peter has had the request. And so he steps down out of the boat and he walks on the water. And though a few lines later we discover that he begins to sink, let's just hold that thought. Peter has stepped out of the boat and he's walking on the water because he said, if it's you, tell me to come. Jesus said, come. And so he does. So hold that part of the passage again in your minds. And we're now going to think about ourselves. And this is very much Rachel's voice here. This is very much where God has been nudging her and encouraging her to speak to us as a church. And so I'm bringing it to you as what I think with her. I was thinking, yes, this seems to be what God is about saying. He's about saying to us now. For many of us, personally, in our lives, individually, life is very stormy at the moment. It might be emotionally, it might be physically. One way or another, life is tough. And then for us as a church, we're also aware of the storm that's going on around us, the storm raging. Some of that is the stuff going on in Ripley around us, and that public meeting that's going to happen here is going to address some of that. The violence, the addiction, the hardship that many different people are facing in our town. And then there's bigger stuff. There's all the anxiety and the fear which comes from things that we hear in the news, some things in our own country, some things further away. We pick up that concern for the country and for the world, and we need to hold it in different ways. But there's definitely a storm raging there. In amongst the reality of all of that, Rachel has had a sense that it's as if Jesus is passing by us as individuals and us as a church at the moment. It's a time of opportunity and a time of possibility, because Jesus is revealing himself, who he is, and he's summoning faith, encouraging faith in us. As a church, he's already led us through a process of healing some stuff from the past. That was part of the focus last year as we thought about stretching out our hand for healing. And he's been preparing the ground for new things and new ways of doing things, including strengthening and empowering us with his Holy Spirit. That's what we were focusing on as we headed into the summer this year. And from the beginning of last year, in fact, when Anne Edmonds came in January, but also more focused in the last couple of weeks, he has been asking us, what have you in your hand? What have you got as a church already? And it's a time now when we have a choice to make. A choice in our own lives as individuals, yes, but also God's call to us as a church is that we have a choice as a church together. This is something corporate, something not for any one of us to do on our own for the church, but for all of us to do together. It's a choice of how we're going to go forward with Jesus as a church. Are we going to hunker down in the boat? The disciples in the boat knew Jesus already. They'd seen what he'd done. They were amazed. They trusted him. And some of them probably thought, let's stay as we are because Jesus is sure to put this right in a moment. In a sense, they were letting Jesus pass by, pass on by. Or are we going to pray as a church that unconventional, crazy, adventurous prayer that Peter prayed and say to Jesus, tell me to come to you on the water. Tell us, All Saints Ripley, to come to you on the water. Are we up for praying that prayer? Is it something that we're ready to do together as a church? We don't have to. It's a choice. In a sense, the ball is in our court. If we ask him, Jesus will call us to come to him, just as he called Peter. But are we going to ask him? Do we want him to call us out onto the water? This is a vital question for us at this point. Plans are being made, drawing on all that we've seen and all that we have and all that we've shared, going back through our history as a church. Some of these things that we're drawing on are from a long, long time back. Others of them are from back at our day away when we thought together about the future of our church almost a year ago now. There are plans for building. There are plans for the future, developing specific strands of ministry that would be our focus here in the church in this coming season. But some of those plans will take water walking. They will take faith and courage to step out of the boat and to walk towards Jesus in a way that might seem impossible at times. It's as though Jesus is saying to us at this point, I won't even ask you to step out of the boat unless you want me to. But if you do ask me, I will call you to come, and you will find me to be bigger and stronger and more awesome than you had ever imagined. And you will find yourselves being able to do things that you hardly dare imagine. Rachel and I are wanting to pray that prayer. We're wanting to pray that prayer for our own lives and for our lives together, but we're wanting to pray that prayer for this church. We're wanting to say to Jesus, if it is you, tell us to come to you on the water. But we know that for us as a church, that is not just up to us. We need to stand together as a church. We need to be willing to step out of the boat onto the waves together. Probably need to be willing to get wet together, as it were. And in doing so, if we do so, we will encounter Jesus in a new and fuller way and a more awesome way. We are in the boat. That's already the case. We are on the lake. We are in the storm. We know that in our own lives. We know that in the life of our church. Jesus is also on the lake with us, and he is passing by. This is a time of encounter. This is a season of encounter. And there will be some specific moments of decision ahead. I pray that we will have courage to be water walking people of faith and encounter Jesus in all his fullness and encounter and embrace his plans in all their fullness. That's my hope, that's my prayer, that's my belief that we will do that as a church. It's ahead of us. There will be moments, but I leave you with that encouragement to ask yourself, ask ourselves as a church, will we be ready, are we ready to step out and walk on water as God is calling us to, if we ask him to? Amen.